It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's just turning 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 26th of October, 2023. And you're very welcome along to another 9 till noon show. Yes, it is Thursday's edition and it's another busy one. We're going to cover a lot of big issues for you today. And we want you involved in that conversation if you want to be involved in that, of course. 0860 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 0860 25000. Give us a call either on 07491 25000. Caroline awaiting your call there, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And inviting you to watch the show if that suits you and your lifestyle and where you are. You can go onto YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, and throw us up there on your smart TV on the YouTube app. Or on your Fire Stick as well. Most of you, I think, have either one of those devices at home. If you're on Facebook, we're on Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport as well. And good morning to Dolores, who's a regular watcher of the show. And Dolores is back in Letterkenny University Hospital. I think you were down there for quite some time earlier in the week. Dolores back in again, and she says things are moving fast. So hopefully they are, Dolores, and hopefully we have you out there listening to us at home in the comfort of your home really, really soon. I'm sure you'll get well looked after. Okay, let's have a look at this morning's newspapers. The Tyrconnell Tribune: as Donegal politics turns to next June's local elections, Sinn Féin has already chosen their candidates for the Letterkenny and Milford area, while Fine Gael sets out on the long road to increase their membership in Lifford from the current four councillors. The paper understands the Fine Gael convention, due in a number of weeks, will see outgoing councillor Jimmy Kavanagh joined by another runner in the Letterkenny area. And in Milford, changes on the way. A new name for a new era may well see Cranford's Aaron Sweeney selected in a one-candidate strategy for his three-seater, providing he accepts a nomination. Aaron's a regular on this show. Has been quite critical of Fine Gael in the past, but his tone softened somewhat in more recent appearances on the programme. Well, he could be in the running for a seat there. A secondary school teacher in Letterkenny, Sweeney, who's 26, is just starting out on his career, and he has the potential, the paper says, to be a formidable candidate. Plenty more analysis, as you'd expect, for John McAteer and the team in the paper today. The Donegal News: the handing over of ownership of 1.6 acres of land to a Letterkenny school will transform the educational lives of its pupils, the principal has said. The field has been officially signed over to Skullmora Gone Small, a Loreto-affiliated primary school in the heart of Letterkenny, by Loreto Sisters Ireland. Discussions are underway within the school community for the future use of the field located to the side of the school going forward. The Derry News this morning: a new survey aimed at examining any potential risks to one of Derry's most iconic buildings is set to be carried out. The landmark Austin's building in the Diamond has lain vacant since the closure of the 186-year-old Austin's department store in March 2016. The future of the iconic building was discussed last week at Derry City and Strabane District Council's Austin's Task Force, which comprises the owners of the building, City Hotel Group, council officers and elected representatives. On to the Nationals now, and the row within government about how Ukrainians are housed into the future rumbles on. Government proposals to time limit the state's provision of accommodation to those fleeing the Ukraine war are problematic and impractical, refugee support groups have said. This is the Irish Times. And like, the reality is part of the reason for the changes, it would be hard to suggest otherwise, is to discourage the numbers of people coming here. Really. So in terms of the problems and the impracticality of it, I think the idea being that fewer would come and that would alleviate those issues. Well, in the wake of a cabinet row over the suggestions, which have been drawn up in the face of unprecedented pressure on the state system for receiving refugees and asylum seekers, Irish Refugee Council Chief Executive Nick Henderson warned against the proposals. Ethically, it's problematic, but as a policy idea, it's problematic because they don't know if it's going to be successful or not, he said. I just don't think it's practical. Where would people move on to? He asked, questioning whether people would effectively be evicted from welcome centres planned under proposals drawn up by officials. But I suppose the logic is, and this is not expressing opinion, just looking at it logically, if at the moment people are arriving here into hotel rooms which are not suitable long-term accommodation, or into tents which are not suitable long-term accommodation because there is no suitable long-term accommodation, well then you have to let people know that. Say, if you're coming to Ireland, this is what we can offer you for 3 months. But the reality is our housing capacity is full, and that's generally accepted. So at least it's putting the cards on the table, and there are loads of other places around Europe where people can seek safe refuge, and I presume the idea being that they may look at those options. I don't know. I can only imagine that's part of the plan. I think I saw the figure we carried yesterday. Donegal has 7,000 Ukrainian refugees out of a total of almost 100,000. So we have an awful lot in this county, which is great. They seem to be getting on very well compared to the rest of the country. Sligo, all of Sligo, half of Leitrim, and a slither of Donegal. They've got 5,000 in total, and compared to Donegal's 5,000 in total. On to the Irish Independent now, and you might remember there was a big convo that erupted for 3 or 4 days or 2 or 3 days about the reduction in speed limits. It's back in the papers today. In the Irish Independent, people driving on roads earmarked for reduced speed limits may feel they are driving a tractor, this according to a Sinn Féin TD. His comments came as an independent senator said drivers without insurance or under the influence of alcohol or drugs should have their cars confiscated and crushed, which I think is a bit bizarre. It's not very environmentally friendly, is it? Well, Junior Transport Minister Jack Chambers came under pressure in the Oireachtas for his plans to bring in lower speed limits by the end of the year. He wants to cut limits on local and rural roads from 80 kilometres per hour to 60, while also imposing a 30 kilometre limit in towns, cities and residential areas. Sinn Féin TD Martin Kenny told the minister at the Oireachtas Transport Committee hearing that people would not follow laws they believe were ridiculous. If you've a road going between two towns and the first 5 kilometres is relatively straight and a good road and you set that speed limit at a low limit, people are going to say, what the hell's going on here? I feel like I'm driving a tractor. They're not going to abide by it. Mr Chambers said a road between two towns would be up to 80 kilometres, adding that there had been no changes proposed to speed limits on those roads. And also, in terms of the speed limits, they would be adaptable, dependent on. I mean, there are roads, I think, are obviously 80 kilometre roads. Going into Chrysler, that road from Termin to Chrysler, it's 100 in places, when really it's probably not safe to be 100. It probably should be 80. I presume that's the type of changes we may be looking at. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, in it, like many of the papers, have ongoing coverage of the crisis in the Middle East. Benjamin Netanyahu warned Hamas terrorists they were doomed as he vowed to push ahead with a ground invasion of Gaza last night. Israel's prime minister said the battle against the gunmen who massacred civilians on October 7th was necessary to save our country, and the airstrikes on Gaza were only the beginning. But questions remain over the exact time frame after it was reported that the country was delaying the ground attack to allow the US to rush missile defences to the region. The US is going to find itself by accident or designed right bang in the middle of a full-blown war in the Middle East. And as Netanyahu was making those comments, there was an incursion into Gaza. No coincidence in terms of timing. But if they go in, Iran-backed, Iranian-backed Hezbollah will be watching on with interest, and other issues elsewhere, of course. The Irish Daily Star this morning: more than 250 counterfeit units of a drug used in the treatment of diabetes and for weight loss have been seized by the Health Products Regulatory Authority. And I want to mention this because in conversation with Margaret O'Doherty, the pharmacist, earlier in the week, I did mention that there is online, these drugs are available online, and they're in huge demand. And people might go, right, I need more of this, I can't get it, so I'm going to go online. And it's really, really dangerous. The HPRA said that the 254 units of fake semaglutide came in white powder vials in clear liquid form. The drug is primarily for diabetes treatment, but it's also used without recommendation as an appetite suppressant. Grania Power, HPRA Director of Compliance, said those who purchased such products online were risking their lives. So really, please be very, very careful. You could find yourself really quite sick if you were tempted to go down that route. So I'll just mention it on the off chance that one of you who may have considered it might think again. Phones are going to be banned in the classroom. The Irish Daily Mirror reports today phones will be banned in classrooms under new plans being prepared by government. Senior government ministers are keen to tackle what was referred to as the scourge of the rampant prevalence of the devices in schools. The flood of phones in schools, particularly smartphones, is having a detrimental effect on education, with teachers telling the Irish Mirror that it's destroying school life. Education Minister Norma Foley has recognised this and is working on legislation or legislative solutions to address the problem. Tomás de Mícheál Martin is another strong supporter of the proposal, which will be officially brought to the Cabinet table in the coming weeks. What do you think? Would you like, as a parent, guardian, or even as someone who isn't, someone just who cares for children, do you think it's a good idea to ban phones from all classrooms? They shouldn't be in there to begin with, really, should they? You're in there to learn. You know, you can't go into a, you couldn't go into a meeting at work and sit on your phone. You'd be chased out of the place or told to put it down, or you couldn't go into mass or church or wherever you might go to pray and sit on your phone. So why is it acceptable for children to have them in the classroom on the off chance that they take them out and have a look? It's kind of a non-brainer for me. I can't believe we need legislation to sort it out. You know, it's that kind of a thing, but clearly we must do. Any teachers out there, if you're off, give us an insight into the problems of phones in classrooms and why we might need legislation to ban them, why it's not already a given they shouldn't be there to begin with. The Irish Sun this morning: news publishers have called for urgent reform of defamation laws. Newspaper chiefs yesterday told TDs that the current ones hamper the proper functioning of democracy. And at a special briefing, they warned of the rising prospect of so-called libel tourism due to the outdated use of juries. There were also calls at the Journalism Matters event to enact a serious harm test to bring defamation laws up to date. Funny, I've never seen any articles about the amount of paper newspapers use to produce. Has that ever been discussed, or is it a problem or an issue? It's not something I'm, by the way, stating. It's just I've never read about it, how much paper is used and where is it sourced for the production and transportation of newspapers. I'm just really surprised it's never come up. Not that I'm saying it should, you know what I'm saying? But lots and lots of stuff is discussed. That never is. Right, 086 60 25000. The WhatsApp and the text line is open. And if you want to send us a voice note as well for broadcast on the radio, if that suits you, for any reason, maybe it's handier for you, maybe you're better at speaking something than typing it. We want everyone to have access to the airwaves to express their views for whatever reason. So if you want to send a voice note, on WhatsApp, 086 60 25000. As I mentioned, your calls to 07491 25000. And you can comment online as well if you're watching. OK, we welcome on to the programme now Damien McDermott, Senior Engineer with Donegal National Roads Office. Good morning to you, Damien. Damien, thank you so much for taking the call today.
How are you doing, Greg? How are
things? I'm doing OK. How are you getting on?
Not so bad.
Right, we'll start straight off. We're talking about the traffic lights at the Polestar and traffic management around Letterkenny more generally. I suppose from your perspective and where we're at the moment, you know, what would you give the new traffic management system out of 10 as it stands this morning?
Well, I suppose at the moment, you can't really judge it at the moment. Obviously, we're still in a bedding in period for us. Okay, we're a bit disappointed, particularly with the Remelton Road and the queues that are forming there. In reality, all that was done last week was setting the baseline for this. It's an evolving system. It learns as it goes along. It learns to reallocate time as it goes forward. We could perhaps have stepped in and manually adjust things, but if we do that, that puts back the overall learning of the system. So we want to be able to sort of learn itself to be able to react to queues itself. Mm-hmm. So at this stage, I think we're concerned with the Remelton Road, because that's the one leg that we think is performing very poorly, and we may need to do something more radical with that leg going forward. But at the moment, I think it's too early to make a judgment call on the lights themselves. I think in general, I would say those obviously key peak hours, it's working fine. People are using them pretty well now, in fairness. I was up there a couple of days myself, and in general flow, people, there is some concern with misuse of lanes and all that, but I think that the people are getting used to them and they are starting to use them fairly well.
Yeah, but driver behaviour surely can't be responsible for traffic this morning up at Lagerberg School and an hour and 15 minute waits on Remelton Road. That's not going to be down to motorists.
No, absolutely not, and I didn't say that.
I'm not. what I'm just. I never said it to me. What I said. I'm just trying to ascertain what the cause and effect is. I'm not saying you said that.
No, listen. As I said, look, the lights themselves. Obviously, there's queues there anyway, but the lights themselves obviously have time to bed in, right? So I said last week they were being set, as in trying to get the baseline set on them. The MOBA system is kicking in now, so it should start to reallocate space a lot better. Now, we could manually step in and do that for us, but then it doesn't learn. It takes the process a lot longer for us to do. Mm-hmm. So this is part of the process of doing that. And again, I probably refer to the Ballygofay Faye situation, where we did have a lot of initial problems with the lights in Ballygofay Faye, but that has generally sorted itself out. I know you come up through there fairly regularly. Mm. It is generally, and you get moving there fairly well to it at this point in time. So it is an evolving system. I think in the next week or so, we should see improvements on that. The whole point of this is to create an improvement. So we're not going doing this if we're not going to get an improvement. And it is a key part of the Letterkenny Traffic and Transport Plan. You know, the signalisation of junctions is a key element of that whole plan for traffic management within Letterkenny. So, you know, it needs to work, all right? It's very, very important to work. Obviously, it can't take away from our new road. New road is essential. You know, when we've got 35,000 ADT being funneled down one road, it's always going to be a problem, okay? So, you know, we won't get away from that. But at the same time, the signalisation of junctions, this one and the subsequent signalisation of other junctions is an important element of traffic and traffic management in Letterkenny, and it needs to work, because if it doesn't work, we've nowhere else to go. It's the only other show in town with regard to manage our traffic.
Yeah, what was there before is also an option, but obviously one that we don't want to have on the table. In terms of the learning process, that can learn and adapt to the future, even if, say, for instance, traffic coming in on the dual carriageway is approaching on one lane. Does that not disturb the flows around the Clanree roundabout, if I can call it that, and then the flow on to the two lanes into Letterkenny? Or is this system so intelligent it actually can account for that and ensure that it's learning correctly?
Yeah, obviously if the queuing, if people are queuing sort of irregular on it, it does cause it some problems, but the sensors are across both lanes, so it should be identifying that. But obviously it'll probably be considerable why people aren't using both lanes. It's probably why what the system will be trying to work out, and that might be a difficulty for us.
Would it not have made more sense then for the learning process to be whilst all roads were open? Either defer works on the dual carriageway.
I thought you meant before on the four, single use on the four lane. No, absolutely not. No, that shouldn't affect at all. It's reading it closer to the roundabout. It's taking its sensors much closer in towards the roundabout. Okay. So that's an effect whatsoever. Sorry, my apologies.
That's the way I phrased the question, Damien. Yeah. And just then also as well, a lot of people are avoiding the roundabout at the moment, using back roads, not using the road system like they would have ordinarily. You know, you'd have heard a lot of reports from people that are effectively on bypass routes now. Does that affect the learning of the system in that it's learning with an altered level of traffic at normal times?
I would have to say that there's enough traffic around us anyway, so it's plenty to learn with anyway. I don't think that's going to affect it too much.
No problem. So it's not really the actual volume of traffic, it's just as it approaches at the near side and a few people avoiding doesn't make any difference.
Exactly, but what you should do is, if it's getting steady flows from a certain direction, for example, the Lamentable, what it should be doing then is giving it much more green time than it would the other legs. Mm-hmm. Now, so it works fairly well when you've got maybe one or two legs that are high volume, and then two that aren't. The two that aren't are going to get a lot more red time, you know, over the period, and that's what should be happening now more and more. But up to this point, it's been fairly even, with some slight alterations to those, but it means that possibly coming out of town in the morning, you're going to have, you know, a seriously long red time to allow all those coming into town to come in, and that's where you should learn as it goes forward.
Yep. And how long might that process take? Because as you would know too, people are getting really frustrated. They're avoiding the towns at certain times and going shopping elsewhere. So just so people sort of have an idea of when, at the end of the day, look, there's a certain amount of cars. The amount of cars isn't changing. It's just how that traffic is managed and how it's moved around, right? But when might people see it in its finished form, so to speak?
Well, look, the traffic for Exeter are on the ground are telling us, you know, Tom Bush, you know, a matter of a week or so. They would hope from now, once Mobile kicks in now, that we should be seeing some changes and some improvements. Should be settling back to, at the very least, the way it was before, if not some improvement. That's what we should be expecting to see, right? Now, that's, you know, in the short term. And then it should improve going forward after that then. As regards, look, obviously our biggest problem out there is always peak times. I mean, from 8:30 to 9:30, after 9:30, 10 o'clock, really and truly, you know, the system seems to, everything seems to work fairly well out there, you know. So it is very much confined to those peak hours. And look, like if you were to talk to people in general, you know, if you've got an unnecessary journey that hour of the morning, don't be doing it. Obviously, you would have to say, you know, there are necessary journeys, obviously, and everybody has to do what they're doing. But, I mean, you know, there's no point in turning up at those times, because that is obviously the peak times. When I go to Letterkenny, I try and obviously avoid, you know, peak times if you can, because it makes sense, you know, for yourself. But obviously, look, we have to deal with those, and that's the whole point in the system, is to deal with those peak times. And I think within a week or two, we should be seeing some improvement. We'd hope to, and we need to see improvement, because I mean, we're not doing it just for the sake of doing it, you know. And I know it does help pedestrians and all that across the road. That's not what we're doing for. We're hoping this will assist in those peak time journey times to ensure that you get out the right. And in fairness, just looking at, although we have some longer queues out there, we're trying to do it looking around our journey times, and we find that the journey times are actually fairly steady and not too bad. The queues are longer. It just means that people are being stopped, and then rather than what we had was a steady stream previously, is that you're getting a fair enough run through the lights when it happens. So journey times, we'll keep an eye on as well to see if that improves as well.
From what you've been able to observe, and your team has been able to observe so far, Damien, are you satisfied that this roundabout is big enough to accommodate the traffic lights layout, i.e. Traffic being stopped on the roundabout? Because some people report lorries, their tail end blocking junctions, and they can't move on green. Is the roundabout big enough for this traffic light configuration? Are you satisfied?
Yeah, no, for the traffic light figures, the roundabout's big enough. Our biggest problem with maybe the scale of the roundabout or the lanes coming into the roundabout is just those peak flows. For example, the Romanton roadside, an additional lane coming in there would obviously be much more beneficial. So that's the sort of thing we said. As regards the general layout of the roundabout, look, bigger would be better. Look, if a signalised junction rather than a roundabout would be better, we get more lanes in. But first of all, we have no real scope to manoeuvre with the scale of the roundabout. But certainly, as regards the lanes coming in, we'll have to look at going forward probably. I know that was as a long-term thing in the Letterkenny Traffic and Transport Plan as regards some filter lanes off the roundabout to take those peak flows. Again, you know, they involve CPO. There's no quick or simple solution to those either. But that's something that we'll look at as well going forward. But obviously, our key thing is to maybe trying to get the bypass done and trying to get the traffic flows equalised around the town rather than all coming down one road.
And we'll talk about maybe the plans and when we might see some of that. Some of it's crystal ball stuff, even for someone in your position, Damien, because we are, we are reliant on central government funding and what have you. But anyway, a lot of people are concerned. I share the concern as well with this new road layout. It doesn't seem, the four lanes into Letterkenny and out, particularly into Letterkenny, it doesn't seem to have been designed with any plan to deal with emergency vehicles. Many people have found themselves sat on the four lanes, just nowhere to go, the two lanes in, a siren's blaring behind them, people pulling out onto the roundabout on red to try and let the emergency vehicles through. Is it unusual or is it normal for a road to be designed in such a way that for a lot of the time there's a lot of traffic on it and there's no way for an emergency vehicle to get through?
Yeah, well, look, when we designed the road at the start, I mean, that was all taken into consideration, and there was consultation on that in respect to the emergency vehicles. Realistically, vehicles get through. If you look at the rest of the town where you have single lane traffic, you don't really have anywhere for vehicles to pull either. So it's the same situation all the time. Our problem here is traffic volumes rather than the design of the road. And if we try to design it for extra space and all that, it's not going to really help.
No, I understand that, but I mean there are devices that have been installed, presumably to protect the cycle lane, which actually stops people being able to pull out of the way of an emergency vehicle. So some might say, well, it's putting the the security of the cycle lane above the ability to move out of the way to let an emergency vehicle through. But that's common design. That's normal. Yeah.
It is, and you know, obviously you don't want to put the cyclist risk by leaving it open to the traffic either. So it's bad, but there are areas for. I mean, look, we can look again, but there are areas where the emergency vehicles can pull in. There's a counterflow system available as well, if necessary in the case of emergencies. That's all been looked at as regards how it will be dealt with. I think, look, basically, no matter what we do with the road there, with the traffic problems we have, emergency services are going to struggle at a busy time in Letterkenny. You know, I mean, even if they get past the four-lane road, you know, they try and go up towards the Creamy roundabout, you know, there's no room for manoeuvre there either on any of those roads. I think, in fairness, it's not an issue just for the four-lane road. It's just a general issue with regards traffic in Letterkenny.
All right. Where else are traffic lights going in and when?
Well, the next phase really was from the Polestar then towards the Creamy roundabout, where we're moving both the Ballyrain roundabout and the Creamy roundabout, and they're being replaced by signalised junctions.
What's a signalised junction? Sorry, Damien, pardon my ignorance. A signalised, is that?
Signalised, well, signalised, yeah, traffic light junction.
Okay, is that at the Remelton Road as well? Sorry, I'm terrible on names of roundabouts.
Ballyrain is where Ballyrain School, where the colleges residences are there. There's a strange arrangement of a right turning in there, which is not ideal at the moment. So hopefully it'll improve that, and improve stacking then along that road as well. Hopefully we'll be able to get more lanes in along the road as regards we'll be able to reallocate lanes when we have lights. And then obviously the Creamy roundabout is a very small roundabout. I think people find that very difficult anyway at the best time. But again, big volumes of traffic, it's going to be difficult. Hopefully it'll probably just probably stagger queues as they go out, but that's part of it. Coming into town then, there are other new lights coming in from the town then up at Knocknamoan and stuff like that as well that are part of the overall plan. I'm not familiar, I only do with National Road, so I can only really tell you about the National Road.
No, that's okay, I understand that. Obviously, as you said, these are all, I mean, they're a bit more than stopgap measures, don't get me wrong, but really in the wider context, it's about improving the road infrastructure around Letterkenny, into Letterkenny, bridges. What is the status of all of that? What's the plans and what's the timeframes as far as you've been told?
Well, just as regards why it's so key, we've got all the traffic coming into Letterkenny through one main lifeline route, basically. And I think it's accepted that's not tenable going forward for any town of any size. So, look, the 10T project covers a link from Dromore and Bunnaggy across to the Creamy roundabout at that location. Okay, so basically it provides a bypass of the town, so all that traffic coming from Melton, which will cause so much problem at the moment, will be able to bypass around straight to the dry arch and away. And similarly, then there's also a separate project, then the Southern Relief Road project, which will go from the dry arch on the southern side heading towards the Old Town direction. So that's another project that's happening as well, that's separate to ourselves. So on the 10T project, look, the business case has been done for that. Look, we've been working on that scheme for almost 7 years now. I think it's just about 7 years. It's way too long to work on any scheme. But that's the nature of the process for developing major road products at the moment. The business case has gone to government. The business case, the cost-benefit analysis of the scheme shows that it's a very, very favourable scheme to develop. It's with the department. They've go through their internal, themselves and DEEPA go through an internal checking process of the scheme. It's all about value for money and such like, and they have to give us approval then to proceed to publishing the CPO and publishing the scheme and doing the statutory processes to get planning for the scheme.
And so do you have any? I mean, it's hard for you to say anything because then you could be held to it. But in your experience, do you have in your head any likely timeline?
Well, the way it would normally work, if we get approval to go to publish, we could expect an oral hearing within a year, okay? If, again, the key thing then is if we got objections to the schemes, you know, and you know, judicial reviews and all that, you're talking about, you know, we don't even know what the timer would be on that. But if everything went fairly smoothly, you know, you could be out of that by, you were probably 2025. Really, and then you get into the procurement process, all about whether the government is willing to fund it then at that point in time, and if money's available to deliver the scheme at that point in time. So that's so you're talking about post 2025, you're probably 2026, 27 before you get construction going at the earliest.
And just finally back to the traffic lights, just a tone of the messages coming through, Damien. A lot of people in different areas of Letterkenny saying, look, we can't get out of our driveway now with traffic. The old town's much busier than it used to be. People still have concerns about emergency vehicle access, that it's more difficult now than it was before, even though we've spent an awful lot of money on this road. You are confident that traffic around Letterkenny, once these lights bed in, will be the same as it was previously, if not a little bit better, and you're suggesting that should happen within a fortnight?
Yeah. Well, first of all, look, the traffic lights around what will only deal with traffic at the roundabout. It's not going to deal with issues at Old Town, so I mean, I can't see how it's not going to affect it.
Because people are not using the four lanes, they're using other roads. They're coming in over Drumkeen, or they're turning left going down. Okay. You know yourself how the traffic's ending up in the Old Town.
Yeah, fair enough. We would expect that the signalised junction at the post should work as efficiently as previously, if not better. So therefore, we'd expect an improvement. We're not doing this not to have an improvement. Okay. We'd expect an improvement.
Do the other lights go on the four lanes, and what impact might that
have? On the four lane itself, we're probably going to leave those for the time being, as pedestrian crossings there, really. We're going to leave them until we're well and truly bedded in with these other lights. So, look, we may do it before Christmas. We may leave them until after Christmas at this stage. Those are on the four lane road now. The other scheme between that and the Creamy roundabouts, that'll be happening, we're hoping, construction-wise, probably end of next year.
Okay. Okay, Damien. Thanks very much for that. We do appreciate you making yourself available. Take care. Damien McDermott, Senior Engineer with the Donegal National Roads Office. Lots of you messaging in. It's a biggie and a big issue, of course. We'll talk to those after these. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Right, so I got contacted by a number of parents who were concerned about what they perceive to be clusters of cases of influenza A affecting children, a number of children hospitalised. Now, obviously, I don't know what that means or if it's just as I say, those motivated to contact me doing so, or if it's reflective of something that's going out on the community. So we decided to contact Dr. Anthony Breslin, who's a consultant on public health with the HSE, just to get some clarity on this. Good morning, Anthony. Thanks so much for helping us. And
good morning, Greg.
Presumably, hopefully, maybe putting some minds at ease. OK, so influenza A, what is it and how does it vary from, you know, a regular cold or a flu?
Well, influenza A is the name given to one of the main circulating types of influenza we have at the moment. We have influenza Bs as well. They're the main one we see in this part of the world. And there are various different subtypes below that. And the vaccine is modified each year to try and cover the types of influenza A and B we have. Influenza is different from your sort of mild viral infection in that you get more ill. You you have it. It's not just a runny nose. You keep on going. It does knock you for six, and you if you have it bad, you won't pass the €50 test. That there's €50 on the ground in front of you. You won't get out of bed to get it. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, we start monitoring. We monitor for influenza all throughout the year, but we really step it up during September. And at the moment, nationally and even locally, we're not seeing big numbers. We're seeing the usual small starters we usually see. I suppose we're usually expect an upsurge around Christmas or after the new year. Having said that, you do get occasions where in a situation in a building, in an organisation, you might get an upsurge of influenza due to people being together. And I think what you're alluding to has happened in this premise. I'm not going to say too much about it. I don't get into personal information. But thankfully, we haven't seen, we've only seen a very, very small number of people hospitalised. And when they have been, it's been just overnight. And we have been in contact with the school involved, and they've been doing everything as they should have been doing. They sought advice early on. They've been advising parents to keep their children who have severe symptoms to stay at home for a number of days until they're well enough to come back for 48 hours. And we're not saying stuffy nose, runny nose, a bit of a sneeze, that happens, but when a kid really has more severe symptoms, to stay away.
Yeah, and there's no protocol as such in place for action beyond that, is there? So in other words, whether it's a school or an office or anything like that, there's no protocol in place for saying, right, you know, we'll shut for a day or two or whatever like that. It is a case of if people are symptomatic, to stay at home.
Terribly severe. We would hope that either we would have contacted the school or the workplace, or they would have contacted us, and we might have to take further action. But we, touch wood, haven't really had to close down a school because of influenza.
Anthony, go ahead.
But I just think what I was going to say is that there is a flu vaccine out there for children aged 2 to 12, which is free, and the uptake so far is very, very low. So we're just take the opportunity to encourage people to get the flu vaccine in the children. It's they don't get an injection, they just inhale it up their nose, and it's a very effective vaccine in that age group.
All right, and where's that available if anyone's listening and
from
saying...
From your GP or from your pharmacist.
Right, okay. And it's a nasal. Can it cause any minor illness soon after taking it, or just for any...
No, usually it doesn't. It does not. Unlike an injection where you might get a little local reaction because you're actually sticking a needle to someone's arm, this doesn't.
All right. And the uptake on that, as you say, is low. Presumably, and this all sounds a little bit familiar, but we'll stick with the influenza for now. Presumably, this also would limit the risk of, you know, a child catching it at school and bringing it home, for an example, to someone who might be vulnerable.
Totally. So you stop bringing it home to siblings, your parents, grandparents, et cetera, anybody with an at risk situation as well. It doesn't benefit just the child themselves, it benefits others.
Yeah, okay. So, as I'm speaking to you, parents saying it's particularly bad in this particular school, why is the school not closed? It's just not it's not the process that's employed to deal with this.
No, because usually if we get the parents to follow the advice, the children out while they're ill, that usually controls the situation.
Yeah, okay. And nothing in particular. So, again, do you know that the flu, the winter flu, Anthony, pardon my ignorance on this, is influenza A, that is that, and we're just talking about early cases. I know there's A, B, C and D. Can you just explain that to us so I have a better understanding of it going
usually
forward?
Usually the majority of the flu types we see in this part of the world are A and B.
Right.
And as I said earlier on, there are subtypes of that, and as I said, that's what we try and change the vaccine to deal with those. Influenza is out there usually all the time now. We get these very, very occasional cases during the summer, but usually we don't. Usually we start seeing these very odd cases in September. And then October we start seeing more cases, and that's when nationally we sort of step up our surveillance. So, for instance, if we get a case of influenza in an elderly person, we'll make contact with them, check have they been vaccinated, anybody else ill, are they living at home, are they in a nursing home, whatever, because obviously we want to assess the risk for others. If they're in a nursing home, has everybody else there been vaccinated? Are there more people there who are ill but haven't been tested? Do we need to give them antivirals, etc.? That's the sort of approach we take there. If a child is admitted to hospital, even if it's overnight, we assess that to see, are they a healthy child? Are they in an at-risk group? Have they been vaccinated? Are they in a special school or whatever?
Yeah.
And obviously, at the moment, because of our refugee situation, we would pay particular attention to someone living in congregate settings, because that's not a normal household setting, and we don't want influenza running through those type of buildings.
All right.
That population either.
Thanks very much for your time this morning, Anthony. I really
Not
do appreciate it. Take care. Dr. Anthony Breslin there, consultant in public health with the HSC. And that's just in response to a number of contacts I had from concerned parents, and just wanted to reference that. It might not be exactly the answer that you're looking for, but that is the way it is. Right, okay. Yesterday, we revealed to you that there are concerns over dermatology services at Letterkenny University Hospital. It's following the retirement this week of Dr. Podmore. Sligo University Hospital now will be expected to pick up the slack, but its consultant Dr. Dermot McKenna has written to Donegal GPs this week. He's not happy, understandably, I suppose you could say, if you read through some of the letter. He says the hospital manager in Letterkenny did not think it worthwhile to let him know. He found out indirectly he's had no contact despite new patient referrals being redirected to him. He said delivering a dermatological service delivering a dermatology service to the Northwest is Sialta's responsibility, not his. Delayed diagnosis impacting melanoma survival, which is a serious cancer, acne in teenagers, eczema, psoriasis, patients' lives destroyed, he said, because of an inability to gain access to care rests on management's shoulders. He says, for years, dermatology in the Northwest has been ignored, neglecting and, quite frankly, he says, dismantled by management both locally and by Sialta centrally, whereas there's been significant expansion in other regions. So some of the concerns, he has less nursing hours now than when he started 20 years ago. He's lost half of his secretarial office space. He can't get adequate secretarial support and can't even get an examination light installed to examine patients properly. He's been looking for that for 2 years, an examination light. Can you imagine? He works alone with thousands of patients awaiting their first appointment. There's a wait time of over 4 years, 4,000 patients in total. Only urgent cases are coming off that patient list, meaning obviously recruitment into the region is very difficult. He says it's simply not possible for him to absorb Dr. Podmore's patients, adding what's happening to dermatology in LUH today will soon be dermatology in Sligo University Hospital tomorrow. And he says Galway University Hospital may end up with the entire caseload. I can't read between the lines, but how much longer would he stick that out? And then I was told that there are already people who were getting dermatology services in Sligo University Hospital that are now being referred to Roscommon Hospital, if you don't mind. Right, OK. The model for dermatology care in the Northwest, this is a statement from the HSE. The model for dermatology care in the Northwest has always been a service based from Sligo University Hospital, and this remains the case, which might be news to that consultant. Historically, this service was supplemented by a consultant from Northern Ireland who ran a weekly clinic in Letterkenny funded by Letterkenny University Hospital. Regrettably, this consultant is no longer in a position to continue running this clinic. Sialta has secured funding for two new consultant dermatology posts for the Northwest, and Letterkenny University Hospital management have identified a requirement that the appointment of these posts would deliver two clinics per week in Letterkenny. Recruitment for these posts is currently underway, but as we heard from the consultant in Sligo, given the state of affairs, that recruitment process might be somewhat complicated. But that's it. Again, here we are. I presume, and I'm sure, there was notice given to the HSC of the imminent retirement of the consultant. I believe they stayed on actually longer than they were going to try and accommodate their patients. And yet still, we're only now in the recruitment process. Some out there might feel that that is unacceptable. We also had a response from the HSC as it relates to diabetes care at Letterkenny University Hospital. I don't have time for that right now. We'll get to that after the news at 10. Other than the temperature, because then I have to worry about how much oil I might use, I really don't pay much attention to the weather in the autumn and winter, unless obviously it's extreme weather. I don't know if I'm on my own out there. Summer, can't get enough of the weather. Anyway, 086 60 25000, flat out on the phone lines today with the topics we've been discussing, carrying those over into the next hour, as you can imagine, and we'll read loads of them out, all of them out, if we can get to them. And keep your calls coming into us, 07491 25000, and don't forget your voice messages if you want them played out on air, 086 60 25000. Okay, we are going to take a break now, and we're going to have the news and obituary notices for you. Stay back, stay where you are though, because it's another busy a couple of hours on the way.